Thought for today. Often I see the person who says it cannot be done is interrupted by someone doing it. Often I see a person who says it cannot be done is interrupted by someone who is doing it. Yes, I'm reading it all correct. Often I see a person who says it can't be done is interrupted by someone who is doing it. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen people who go around and say, it can't be done, it can't be done, it can't be done? Our webmaster is one of those people I get a big kick out. He used to say to me things, it can't be done. And then I'd just sit there and look at him. I'd say, it can. He said, well, if we did it this way, hey, I don't care how you do it. It can be done. I want it done. I put the Swimex in our gymnasium here, and I wanted it level with the ground. And they said, it can't be done, it can't be done. And I said, it can be done. But the soil is too hard, the rock. I said, get a jackhammer in there and chop it out. Oh, all right. Then they said, now the swimming pool, you can't put it down and below. The picture shows it up above. I said, the picture shows it down below too, but that's with a wooden decking. And da da da. And I said, hey, you guys designed this thing so it goes underground, level with the ground, so we can use it like a nice pool. Well, I said, do it, or I'll get another contractor. Oh, okay, you know. So they did it. It's so easy to say it cannot be done. And then when you say someone else is going to do it, all of a sudden they figure out a way to do it. All of a sudden, they figure out that it can be done. Now, I spoke to Sylvia this morning as I was speaking to all of you, and I said, be very careful in giving a lecture. In a lecture, you never laugh at your own jokes, and you never cry. Now, you can cry if you can be a good actor or actress, and you're in charge of yourself, and you can turn it on or turn it off as you wish. But when you let your emotions run away with you while you're giving a lecture or while you're giving a talk, you're ineffective. Because you get so emotional that you cannot put across the feelings that you want to put across. Oh, we all understand that emotionalism. We all understand that she is going through a great inner strife. Shut up. When you're lecturing to people, you're sharing ideas with them. You're not sharing your inner emotional indecision and your inner emotional incapacity. You are sharing with people your strengths. Now, if you're going to share your inner incapacity, your inner weakness, your inner emotionalness, or your laughterness, which you can't control, I don't know what to suggest. Go practice on somebody else. If you're going to be a storyteller, John has taken up storytelling because he finds that a lot of fun. Now, John's telling a story. And he's telling a story about some people who are having a difficult time. And the people are just having a terrible time. They don't have enough of anything and everything is very poor. And John is telling, he's looking to bring pathos into your heart. He's looking to get you sympathetic with his customers, with his people that he's talking about. He's looking to get you under his thumb to just, and you get emotional. Then you have a good storyteller. When he gets emotional, then the story is kaput. The story doesn't get anywhere. If an actress on stage were to get emotional and lose her control, she wouldn't be able to instantly change and become angry and upset, which she must do at certain times. These are things that are trained to you when you're in acting school. They're trained to you when you're in radio school. I took radio school and I took television school when I was in Marquette University, and they were very fascinating things that they told us. They said, you have no right to have any emotions. You have to show them, you have to be in control of them, but you have no right to any emotions. You cannot. You know the outcome of the story, so you're not worried about the middle of it. But you must get your audience so that they flow with you, so that they are with you on whatever you're doing. And so it is that when we give a talk and we say, I can't go on. My mother just died. My husband just ran away with our maid. And, you know, some other little thing. So what? Life is going to go on. You're on stage. No one should have told you that anyhow while you were on stage, right? No one should tell you, Anita, your mother just died. But I'm just going to go on, and I'm playing Lady Macbeth, and how can I do this? Oh, the misery of it. And you just say, that's nice. Okay, now you go on. And after you're done with your performance, then you can feel sad. Then you can feel unhappy. But that's not realistic for me to put off my feelings for another time when it's more convenient. Oh, yes, it is. If your child has some terrible situation it's going through and it needs your attention, and your heart is broken because your husband has been killed or your other things, and you've got to go there and work with your child, you'll take first things first. You'll put aside your grief for your husband until later when it's convenient. You will, because your child comes first. Your child's still living. They say, what are you going to do? You have a choice. The mother dies and the child lives, or the mother lives and the child dies. What's your choice? Well, that's individual. That's individual. If the mother has six children dependent on her, and this, she will not be around to take care of the six children if she dies, then the six children die, and so what has she saved? She saved a little baby for nobody to take care of. So you see, oh, that's so logical, that's so understandable, that's so this. No, it isn't. When you're going through that situation, if you allow your emotions to control you and manipulate you, you might make the wrong judgment, and then everybody dies. You might make the wrong judgment, and you are not able to be there to be in control and to take charge of things that have to be done. We do not have the luxury as human beings, we who seek to be masters, do not have the luxury to be play the game of human beings and be emotionally distressed, be emotionally out of control. We must always be in control. Often I see people, when they say it can't be done, they're interrupted by people who are doing it. Have you ever noticed that? That oftentimes happens. So often we say something can't be done, and someone over here is listening and they're not paying attention. They say, I know a way. I know a way it can be done. And they come over and they do it right while we're watching, and we don't give it a thought. Hey, you're doing what I just said can't be done. We wake up to that fact. It's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. I oftentimes move furniture, and big piece of furniture that can't be moved. And there's no way it can be moved. But I say, hey, I want to move it. I don't want to call somebody else in to help me move it. I don't want to strain a gut. I don't want to hurt myself. I want to move it. How shall I move it? Well, there's no rush. So I get a little crowbar and inch it over where I want it to go. Just inch it along. Get the crowbar under, lift it a little bit and twist it. Lift it a little bit, twist it. That takes me half an hour to move something that if I had two or three people there, it could have been done in a minute. But I did it myself. I can do it. We want to know that whatever it is, we can do. We want to believe in ourselves. Believe in whatever it is that we're doing. We don't need to say we can't do things. We say, I'm going to wait till a few other people come here and then we'll do it together. That's intelligent. Or we say, there's a way to do this. There's a way to handle it. I got a kick out of our John and Joe, George. Nice guys. And John says, you know, they want to deliver all of this mulch and stuff. But the truck, to deliver a tremendous dump truck of it, would cost $100. And they'd rather drive from here down to El Cajon, basically, pick up a load of the dirt and bring it back up here and then put it to where they want it to be. And they do this every day, bringing up a load of this dirt, this special soil. What's the name of it?
Compost.
They bring up the truckload of compost to put it in and use it. Now, they could have it up here all at once. But George says, but I don't have a lift truck so that I can go and pick it up and then take it over to the tree. He says, I have to do it by a wheelbarrow. He says, when I have it in the truck, I can park the truck near the trees that we're working on, and then we can just bring it over easier. And I think to myself, when you're going to look for the easy way to do things, you're going to eventually make it hard on yourself. Every time you try to make it so easy for yourself, you're making it hard. Now, for John to... he was standing there at a bush, a beautiful bush. And he said, this is a lovely bush. He said, I've been trying to raise these bushes and they just don't want to grow. Here they're growing wild for you guys. And I said, yeah, that's the way things happen for us. And so he said, I'm going to mulch this bush. And I said, good. And so we were standing there talking. And George was standing talking with me, and John was reaching under the bush. He went to the truck, which was, you know, a few yards away, and got the shovel. Then he started cleaning the stuff out from under the bush. And he started bringing the dirt out and going in toward the root, and he started leveling it out. And he got under there and he clipped off about four bushes, branches that were too low. And all of this he did in 5 minutes. Spread it around, opened it up, made a big trench. He went to get some fish stuff that he put in there. It's a very high concentrate manure type of thing, or fertilizer. And he put it around in there. And Button loved it because it smelled like fish. And John says, but it stinks, you know. But he put it in there. And then he put a little bit of dirt, and then he went over himself. He got a wheelbarrow full of mulch from the truck, brought it back, and he spread it all around in there. Then he put a little more fertilizer on top of it. Then he leveled it all off so that it was all nice and smooth, and it looked finished already. And all this he did in no more than 6 minutes. It just zoop, and he wasn't working hard. He wasn't working fast. He was just working efficiently. Every movement of his shovel brought about a result that he wanted. And then when he was all done, he took his rake and he went around that bush and he raked up all the grass that was lying around there that, you know, was sort of laying on top. And it looked like a finished job. As you go through the yard here now and you see these things, what do you see? You see everything looking so orderly, everything looking so beautiful. It looks like we're having a garden down there. Now, here it's taken these guys a couple of days to, but they know what they're doing. It's not that we don't know what they're doing, we're doing, but they know what they're doing, and they will not allow them to do anything but their best. And they get in there, and with their wisdom and with their experience, they go around it. But they add another quantity to this that most people don't, and that's the quantity of love. They love each little plant, each little bush, each little tree. They talk to them,
yeah,
and they tell the trees what they expect of them, and they say, you're looking great. And then the trees that they had done 2 or 3 days before, they took me to see, and they said, now see the changes that have taken place. Now, it's only going to be a few days, and these things are just going to start singing. I'm going to have to come back, and I'm going to have to start reforming the branches as I want them by clipping these little bushes off, these little nodes off, and letting others grow so that it'll become a nice, bushy tree. Really beautiful. So, Other people say it can't be done. And in the process of saying it can't be done, another person comes along and does it, doesn't make one comment about it, and it's done. While George was standing there talking to me, telling me how he should have a lift truck and how he should do this and how he should do that, John was over there picking up the wheelbarrows, not saying one thing to George or me or anything, just going and doing it. And in 5 minutes, 6 minutes, he had that whole ditch dug, the whole tree surfaced, and all the clippings put aside, and he even raked around it. You say, my God, he must have worked fast. 5-6 minutes is a long time. It's a long time when you are dedicated to doing what you're doing, when you forthrightly do that which you do and just go click, 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 click. It's beautiful. You see, other people will say it can't be done because they need to have lift trucks, they need to have this, they need to have that. And then the other person, not being unkind, perhaps not even thinking that it can't be done, goes and does it beautifully, wonderfully, sensitively, and it is complete. We have been trained from little children to believe there are certain things that shouldn't be done or can't be done. And so we believe that. But yet, somewhere in the world, someone is doing the very things that we say can't be done. Somewhere, someone is doing it. And who knows? That someone may be us, that are doing the things that only a moment before we said were impossible. Only a moment before we said we couldn't do. And we do it. I'm amused at Sylvia oftentimes. I say, Sylvia, we'd like to have this in the gist. Oh, I haven't got room for it. I can't fit in. We can't do this. We can't do that. And then 2 minutes later, she comes in. She's got the whole thing done. The whole thing done. Redone. And I said, Sylvia, this is incorrect here. So she goes back and she corrects it and brings it back in just 2 minutes. And it's all done. And I said, oh, here's a couple more things that would be done. No comment. She just goes back and corrects it and comes back. But no more than 10 minutes before that, she had told me that it can't be done, that we can't reach our deadline, we can't do this because of that. And then she goes back and does it, and in just a few moments. Now, why does she do that? Why is she able to do something she said couldn't be done? Because she had mentally finished the job. And then when we wanted to make some changes in it, she said, oh my goodness, this is going to upset everything, and it's going to upset the balance of the whole program, which it could do. It could very readily do it. But then she went back there, and with her expertise, she just click, 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 and everything was done in perfect order, and no problem. Now, how many times do you rebel at us or me when we tell you to do things, and you say, well, it can't be done, or I've got other things to do, or can't you see my list here is 10 miles long? Can't you see these things that I'm doing is a lot of things? You don't really say that, but you think that. And I know what's going on in your minds. And then you rebel. And then you go to do the chore or the task, and you cannot do it easily and quickly because you've got this rebellion in you. However, if any time you're asked to do anything, you just say, okay, no sweat. You go to it, and voila, it's done. It's done so beautifully, so completely, so perfectly that it makes you just think, man, I wish I had realized that before. Well, since we're talking about spiritual things, and since we're talking about direction on a spiritual path, how many times have you said that you got a problem, that you're unable to go into introspection? Oh, this I hear all the time. It's hard to go into introspection. It's boring. When I go into introspection, I have so much difficulty because I just cannot be at peace. I cannot keep my mind centered on what I'm doing. I can't be one-pointed. And I say, well, get excited about something. Take anything. Take your health. Take your wealth, take your relationships, take any, get excited about something. And you'll realize how quickly you can start meditating on it by thinking about it, and then introspecting on it by listening. I say, gee, how can I make this relationship better? I'd like to have this friend like me, and I'd like to like this friend. And now, how can I make this relationship better? It's really something. And you're thinking of the ramifications of it. Then all of a sudden, you stop thinking. You say, okay, I'll listen. So you listen. Nothing comes. But the next day, you're talking to that person, and you're saying all the right things for a perfect relationship. You are not responding to anything negative that was before, anything negative that was unforgivable. You are just being yourself, and lo and behold, you were in introspection, you did hear, and now you're responding. You don't need to have, this is your introspection number one, this is the point number one. Now this point number one you will carry through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now go forth and sin no more. You know, that's not the way introspection works. Introspection may not even let you know that it's listening. Introspection may not even let you know that you're making any grounds at all, that you are making any progress. Introspection has no responsibility to do anything for you except to be itself. You say, how do I handle this situation? And then you let it go. No thought comes to you, but when it comes time to handle the situation, you handle it beautifully. What is the capital of Pennsylvania? And you think to yourself, is it Scranton, Pennsylvania? You know, what is it? Philadelphia, what is it? And you introspect on it. And then when it comes time for you to have to know it, someone says, what is the capital? You know the answer instantly. You don't know that your intuitive self had tuned into it. But you see, when you let go and you let that divine in you reveal itself to you, then it's already working for you. It's already doing those things and informing you of that information that you want to have. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. Our rebellion, which we do from time to time, is not wonderful. See, it's not wonderful. Now, at the table this morning, I said, don't talk. This is a rhetorical question. How many of you know what rhetorical means?
Repeating, repeating, repeating.
Rhetorical means shut up. I'm just asking a question without asking you for an answer. I'm just asking you a question. Now, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? Now, that's a rhetorical question. Now, if I say, Anita, what would you do if you had $50 million right now? Tell me, quick in a hurry. Then she would tell me. But if I say, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? Like, what would I do? Well, I would pay all my bills. I would, no. See, it's a rhetorical question. Just let it soak into your mind. And then the answer is there. And then I come along and I say, all right, here's a check for $12 million. It's in your account. You can write checks for it. You can use it any way you like. What would you like to do? Ooh-wee! That's the first thing you'd like to do. You say, oh my, how wonderful. And then, what am I going to spend it on? What am I going to spend it on? You see, the very act of thinking, what am I going to spend it on, closes you off. So what you do is you say, hey, that's nice. That's nice. You know, I love my mother more than anything in the world. She has been behind me. She's helped me whenever I needed it. She's always been there for me. I want to do something nice for her. Or you say, I wonder what it feels like to be secure, to be able to pay whatever bills you have and not to have anything outstanding. I wonder what that would be like. So you pay all your bills. And It's nothing. It's nothing. It's not even $100,000. You know what I mean? And you have your millions. And you say, my goodness, I can do so many things. When you listen to the divine within you, you'll say to yourself, this is money, and this is money to be enjoyed, but it's also money to be built on, to be invested, to develop, so that I'll never have to have the feeling of needing anything. And that's quite a wonderful thing to do. But other people will come along and they'll do the things that you didn't do. The man who wanted to be a millionaire by the time he was 25, what did he do? He learned all about investing money. He learned all about things to do. And he started putting away his money from the very beginning, investing it wisely. And so he became very wealthy. But did he become wealthy just by the putting away of the money? He became wealthy by the desire. By the desire that was in his heart. Because with that desire, all the doors opened up for him to do whatever he wanted to do. All the doors open up for you. But if you don't do it, somebody else is going to come along and do it. If you don't work with it, somebody else is. Ellen was making the comment as we were investing in our stocks and bonds in the beginning. She says, you know, this Amgen Corporation is a great corporation. She says, I believe in it. They are doing things with synthetic genes and stuff like that, and really new age stuff. And she says, I would like to see us invest in that. So we invested in that. Not a great deal, but we invested. And what has the stock in Amgen done? Oh, it had a few little jerks, but basically it went straight up. And it's still going straight up. Now, why didn't we invest more strongly in that? Because we were not sophisticated enough. We're not sophisticated enough to tell our broker that that's what we like to do. And you see, that's up to us to do. Other people invested in it, and other people made a mint. And then there was a SanDisk company. They make special little disks, and they were just starting out. And we invested in them. Jeff advised us to do that. We did it. And they just went up and up and up and up and up, and they're still going up. They're still doing great. They have little bounces, but they're still doing great. Now, with such knowledge and wisdom behind us, why don't we invest more like that? Why don't we take these? Because they say, don't put all your eggs in one basket. If something were to collapse, then you'd have things elsewhere. But what are you going to do? What is it that we teach? We teach being one-pointed. We teach all our investments are high return and stable. We teach that. We should believe it. And when we don't believe it, then what happens? Nothing. All of our value, all of our investments, all of our good points are lost. Other people are doing it and we're not. How can we be in charge of ourselves? How can we walk the path that is most important for us to walk? How can we be masters? Well, we see other people who say it can't be done, and they're interrupted by people who do it. Don't you be a person who says it can't be done. Be that person who says, I do it, and then it's done. We look at our little puppy. We have a little Maltese, and we pick up that puppy, and the puppy loves to be by himself. He loves to be alone. He loves his own company. And then we pick him up and we say, did you miss us? Were you missing us? Were you sorry to see us there? Are you unhappy in your little cage? No. Never plant that in the puppy's mind. Plant in the puppy's mind, you have a wonderful home. It's so nice that you can sit quietly in your own home. It's so nice you can do it. You see, other people are doing this. They have the children that smile all the time. And when we plant in the mind of our children the negative ideas, then we have a child who cries all the time. Often I see a person who says it cannot be done being interrupted by someone doing it. You be the one who's doing it and enjoy your life so tremendously. I love you.